The last time I preached was last fall, and it was shortly after I came back from my trip to Israel. And you may not remember, but I gave a lesson on the temple. And I'd like to continue doing another lesson that's kind of based on some things that I learned on my trip over in Israel. And I'd like to actually look at Dan, and particularly the high place in Dan. I think I had a little too many pictures in my last lesson, so I kind of tried to cut that back a little bit and just have the ones that are really going to be relevant and helpful in our study tonight. And so hopefully you'll learn a little bit about Dan and get to see some of the actual land that is talked about in these stories. As you know, God commanded his people to worship him in Jerusalem. They were specifically to worship at the temple when the temple was built, which is where Mount Moriah was, where Abraham offered his son, or was about to offer his son Isaac, as I mentioned in the last lesson. And Dan was a place that was set up to worship in a different location than what God had commanded. So if we're looking at the map of the tribes of Israel, Jerusalem is going to be down right in here, and Dan is way up here. You probably can't read it very far back since it's small, but it's this town actually in the land of Dan, and you'll notice it also says L-A-I-S-H right before it with Dan in parentheses. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. But just note that we're talking about the town of Dan, and not specifically the tribe of Dan, because this whole area in yellow here is the land of Dan. There's also lands down here that's Dan. But this lesson is about the city of Dan, which was in the tribe of Dan, which was named after Dan, who was one of the 12 sons of Jacob. So just to clear that up. So, as I said, the correct place to worship was in Jerusalem, where God told his people, and Dan was later set up as a place to worship up in the north. Now, I'd like to start this lesson by giving a brief overview of how the town of Dan was started, or the city, whatever you want to call it. And it comes from the book of Judges in chapter 18, and I honestly had forgotten this story. I've read through the Bible at different times in my life, but it's interesting how some stories you just completely forget about, and then you reread them, and it's like reading them for the first time. And I'm not going to read through all of the chapter. I'll read a couple of verses here and there if you want to turn there. But Judges chapter 18 explains how the town of Dan came to be, and it also explains why on the map we see that town of L-A-I-S-H also given as a name for that city. So to summarize Judges chapter 18, this is when the Israelites were all choosing their territories, and the people of Dan hadn't completely found all of their land yet. This is when they were going up into that northern region there. And they sent out 5 men to spy out the land, kind of like how the spies originally went to search out the Canaan land. And these 5 warriors or strong men were on their way up in that way, and they actually stopped by in this house of a man named Micah. And Micah, it turns out, he had his own personal priest for his family. This priest served Micah's family. And he also seemed to have some other idols and things that he shouldn't have had, such as things to worship other gods or other images. And so they noticed that. They asked the priest while they were there, is God going to bless us in our journey here? We're trying to find land. And the priest said, yeah, God says he's with you. You know, go ahead and you'll be successful. So the 5 men go. They look at the town of Dan, which was at that time still Laish, or however you pronounce that. And they said, hey, this is great land. It's really nice. This is definitely what we want. And so they went back home to go get the rest of the troops. So they come back, this time with 600 men, to go take over that town. And on the way, the 5 men say, hey, by the way, you might want to stop in here. There's this guy named Micah. He's got a personal priest, and he's got all of these idols and stuff. you know, just in case you want to do anything with that. And they go, hey, that's a great idea. They stop in there. They take the guy's personal priest. They take all of his things that he uses to worship. And they just leave and kind of take off with this guy on their way. And Micah comes home and realizes that they just cleaned him out. And he runs and takes off after him and says, hey, you know, what's going on here? And says, the Danites look at him and they say, you know, what's the matter with you? In fact, I think that's exactly what they say in verse 23, or something along those lines. What ails you that you have gathered such a company? You know, like, what are you bothering us for? And he says, what do you mean? You just cleaned me out. You took my personal priest. You took all my belongings, and you just leave, and you say, what's the matter with you? You know, come on. You stole my stuff. And so they kind of have a little bit of a standoff, but he realizes they've got 600 men, and he's not going to win the battle, so he kind of turns around and goes home. And they take this priest and his idols with them. So the men, the 600 men, they go up to Dan. Well, at the time it was Laish. They're able to take over the city because it's kind of out in the middle of nowhere. They don't really have any good neighbors to call on to defend. So the people burn the town, wipe everybody out. They rebuild it, and they change the name. It becomes Dan. And we can read that at the end of the chapter. If you see, starting in verse 29, it says, then they called the name of the city Dan, after the name of Dan, their father, who was born to Israel. However, the name of the city formerly was Laish. Then the children of Dan set up for themselves the carved image, and Jonathan, the son of Gershom, the son of Manasseh, and his sons were priests to the tribe of Dan until the day of the captivity to the land of the land. So they set up for themselves Micah's carved image, which he had made all the time that the house of God was in Shiloh. I wanted to point this out because this is, like I said, in the time of the judges, this is very early on in Israel's history, and they start out the creation of the city, or creation of it as they made it after they destroyed it. They started out by starting with these idols that they took from Micah's house, and with this priest who was not of the tribe of Levi, and also this guy they mentioned in verse 30, Jonathan, the son of Gershom, the son of Manasseh. So he's of the tribe of Manasseh. He's not a Levite either. And so very early on in this, basically when this town started, they started out with idols and priests who are not of the tribe of Levi, as God had commanded. Just a couple of pictures to show you as we get started as well. This is a picture of some of the water that's in Dan. And it may not be that impressive to you, but the land of Israel is not necessarily a land flowing with milk and honey anymore. And after spending a lot of time seeing a lot of dry ground, it's very refreshing just to hear water, let alone to see this much nice, clear water at the stream. And so there's water all throughout Dan, and it's just very, very good land even to this day. And so you can see why it would be appealing and why the Danites would want to choose that as a place to stay. Okay, now I'm going to back up for a minute and talk about high places, because we're going to get to where the high places were built in Dan, but I just want to kind of do an overview of them first. So first and foremost, where did the high places come from, and what are they? Because this is not something that we find in the Bible that is commanded by God. God didn't say to build me a high place and worship me there. He commanded the people they built altars for God, but altars are a bit different from high places. And it seemed like the whole idea of a high place was kind of the idea of trying to be closer to God. They would build them up somewhere high, like on a mountain, trying to get as close to the heavens as possible, to be closer to God. And also, it would be a place that everybody can see. If you're coming from far away or looking, you can see up on the mountain a high place where people would be worshiping. And this is similar to the temple. The temple in Jerusalem was built up on top of the mountain as well, the same idea. But the high place itself, like I said, wasn't commanded by God. And the first time we read about him, We see them in a negative context, actually. If we look at the book of Numbers, chapter 33, verse 52, it says, "Then you shall drive out all the inhabitants of the land from before you." This is God speaking to the Israelites. "And destroy all their figured stones, and destroy all their molten images, and demolish all their high places." And so God is commanding them, when they're going into this land, to take out all of these forms of idolatry and worship that the people of the land had. And it's also mentioned again over in Leviticus chapter 26 and verse 30. And Leviticus 26 is where God is talking about the blessings and the cursings when they go into this land. If they obey God, he'll bless them. If they disobey him, he'll bless them. And in Leviticus 26:30, it says, "Then I will destroy your high places and cut down your incense altars and heap your remains on the remains of your idols, for my soul shall abhor you." And so God's not using altars and high places interchangeably. He understands the distinctions made. These high places are not places where you offer your sacrifice to God like you would on an altar. And God was very clear that he hated them and that he wanted them destroyed. If we just briefly look at a few verses with the progression of high places, we can get into 1 Kings chapter 3. And verse 2 says, "The people were still sacrificing on the high places because there was no house built for the name of the Lord until those days." And so it seems that before the temple was built, the people were using these kind of as an altar to offer their sacrifices, just because that was what they had there. And the next verse, 1 Kings 3:3, says, "Now Solomon loved the Lord, walking in the statutes of his father David, except he sacrificed and burned incense on the high places." Now that's a bit different. You could say that the people may have been using the high places to worship God in a legitimate way and using them as an altar to do worship the way that God had instructed. But here it's pretty clear that Solomon wasn't using these high places in the way that God had intended them. He was using them in the way that the people of the land had used them, because it says he did what God wanted, except he sacrificed and burned incense on the high places. And so this is a thing that is not okay with God. So Solomon seems to be the first king in Israel that is actually endorsing worshiping God on these high places. And that's an important thing, because when leaders are doing something wrong, they're leading the people down that same path. And it seems like Solomon went a little bit further. If we look at 1 Kings 11:7, it says, "Then Solomon built a high place for Chemosh, the detestable idol of Moab, on the mountain which is east of Jerusalem, and for Molech, the detestable idol of the sons of Ammon." And so Solomon's building these other high places specifically for these other gods that are not really gods. And he didn't replace the temple or the place where the people were worshiping. If you notice where he put it, it says on the mountain which is east of Jerusalem. So east of Jerusalem would be the Mount of Olives, just on the other side of the Kidron Valley. Very close. You could, if you're up on the temple, you can just look across the valley and see over there, there's the high place that Solomon just built for the other gods. And so he almost has you can worship God over on this mountain, or you can take 5 minutes to go over there and worship the gods of Moab over on that mountain. Okay, I'd like to now look at, kind of combine these. We looked at Dan and how it was started. We looked at the high places and how they got started, how Israel adopted what the people of the land had already done and started following in that. And now we're going to see the two together, where King Jeroboam was actually the king that put the high place in the town of Dan. If you have your Bibles, turn over to 1 Kings chapter 12. And I'm just going to read a few verses from there. 1 Kings 12, starting in verse 26. It says, "And Jeroboam said in his heart, 'Now the kingdom may return to the house of David. If these people go up to offer sacrifices in the house of the Lord at Jerusalem, then the heart of this people will turn back to their lord, Rehoboam, king of Judah, and they will kill me and go back to Rehoboam, king of Judah.' Therefore the king asked advice, made two calves of gold, and said to the people, It is too much for you to go up to Jerusalem. Here are your gods, O Israel, which brought you up from the land of Egypt. And he set up one in Bethel, and the other he put in Dan. Now this thing became a sin, for the people went to worship before the one as far as Dan. He made shrines on the high places, and he made priests from every class of people, who were not the sons of Levi. So we see here, Jeroboam, he's the first king of Israel after the kingdom split, and he's motivated by fear. He's afraid that the people are going to turn back to God. They're going to kill him to kick him out of being king. And so he sets up these two high places, one in Dan, one in Bethel, kind of the opposite ends of the territory of Israel, to try to prevent people from going to Jerusalem. And so one of these golden calves in these high places gets put in the town of Dan, which we talked about earlier. Now, I've got a couple pictures. I forgot to show you these earlier. These are just a couple of pictures of the city of Dan. This is one of the gates, and it was actually a pretty fortified city. You had multiple gates. I think there were four or five gates just to kind of get into the main town. And I'm not sure when that was put in. It wouldn't surprise me if the Israelites did that because they had such an easy time taking over the city. But its walls were pretty impressive. You know, if you're looking at a man there and looking at the size of the wall and the size of the stones, it was pretty fortified. But as for the high place and the gold calf that we're talking about, this is the location where that altar would have been, where that high place was that King Jeroboam built. And while the altar doesn't exist in this spot anymore, we can see the basic foundation of where it was, and they kind of put this big metal structure there, so you can kind of get an idea of the size of the altar and what it would have looked like had the altar still remained today. You can get an idea of just the massive size of it, and they've got the little horns of the altar up on the corners there. So this was a pretty large thing. It's not just a small little thing that you kind of walk up to. Right behind that, where the altar was, are some steps which go up a little bit higher, and there's a flat spot up above there, and they believe that's where the golden calf was. And so this is the site that Jeroboam built here to attract the people and to get them to worship there. And as we read in verse 30, it says this thing became a sin because the people were willing to travel all the way up here to Dan, which, as I showed you on the map, is in the far northern corner of the town, of the tribes, to worship here, instead of going to Jerusalem where they should have. But did you also notice that it mentioned in the text that not only did he set up this high place and this golden calf, he also made people priests who were not of the tribe of Levi. And basically allowed anybody to be able to be a priest, which was also against what God said. And if you think about it, these two things that he did, is setting up the high place and changing the priesthood, what a better place to choose to make this change, what a better location than the town of Dan, which actually started out that way, with the Danites getting the idolatrous items from Micah's house and starting with some priests who were not of the tribe of Levi. This town has been doing these exact same things that Jeroboam did since the town was started, and so it was the perfect place for him to start that. And I'd like to look at one other verse. You know, in 1 Kings 12 here, it talks about Jeroboam making priests from any other tribe. So it sounds like just anybody could be a priest. You know, the existing priests stayed being priests, but then if you were from Benjamin or from Naphtali or from Simeon, you could be a priest alongside with them, and maybe they just teach you what to do. But if we look at 2 Chronicles 11:14, we're actually given more detail. And it says, For the Levites left their pasture lands and their property and came to Judah and Jerusalem, for Jeroboam and his sons had excluded them from serving as priests to the Lord. So not only did Jeroboam allow anybody to be a priest, he actually forbid the Levites themselves who were the only ones that were supposed to be priests, he forbade them from being priests at all. And so all the Levites that are scattered throughout the other 10 tribes, where they had land and they had homes and everything, they lost their jobs, and they all had to basically move to Jerusalem or to the rest of the tribe of Judah to be able to do their role that God gave them to do and to be priests, because the king, King Jeroboam and his sons, prevented them from doing that. And so that's a small detail that we miss from Kings. All right, next I'd like to go through a list of some of the kings of Israel and Judah, and this is only going to take a few minutes. I've got the verses on the PowerPoint, so we don't have to turn and read them, but I just want you to notice the theme. Let's look at King Asa. In 1 Kings 15, verses 11 and 14, we're told that he did what was right in the sight of the Lord, like David his father, so he's a good king. But the high places were not taken away. Nevertheless, the heart of Asa was wholly devoted to the Lord all his days. And so it sounds like he's a great guy. He did most of what he was supposed to do. He just failed in this one way. He didn't take down the high places. And King Jehoshaphat, in 1 Kings 2:43, he walked in all the way of Asa his father. He did not turn aside from it, doing right in the sight of the Lord. However, the high places were not taken away. The people still sacrificed and burnt incense on the high places. What about King Jehu in 2 Kings 10? Jehu eradicated Baal out of Israel. That's great. However, as for the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, which he made Israel sin, talking about how he set up those high places in Dan and Bethel, from these Jehu did not depart, even the golden calves that were at Bethel and that were at Dan. King Jehoash, 2 Kings 12. Jehoash did right in the sight of the Lord all his days in which Jehoiada the priest instructed him. Only the high places were not taken away. The people still sacrificed and burned incense on the high places. What about King Amaziah? He did right in the sight of the Lord. Yet it says, only the high places were not taken away. They still are sacrificing on them. King Azariah, he did right in the sight of the Lord as well. Only the high places were not taken away. The people still sacrificed and burned incense on the high places. It almost sounds like I copied and pasted one verse and just pasted it in for all these, right? But it just keeps saying the same thing over and over again. And these are the good kings. I'm not even picking the bad ones that didn't do what God wanted. These are the good kings where it says that they were right in the sight of God. You know, if you go downstairs in the children's class and look at the timeline with the kings of Israel, these are the ones with the smiley faces, and yet they're the ones that time and time and time again, they did right, but they failed in taking out these high places. And so it seemed to really be a problem. King Jotham, he did what was right in the sight of the Lord as well. Only the high places were not taken away again. Even King Hezekiah, we know what a great king Hezekiah was and all the good that he did. You know, there's a few verses I took here. He removed the high places, and you think, oh, wow. All these other guys, they failed to remove the high places. He removed the high places. He broke down the sacred pillars. He cut down the Asherah. He also broke in pieces the bronze serpent, which Moses had made, that serpent that he used and put up for when the people of Israel were dying and God told them to do that to save them. Apparently they'd made that into an idol, and so he took that out. They even had a name for it, the Nushatan. He trusted in the Lord, the God of Israel, so that after him there was none like him among all the kings of Judah, nor among those who were before him. For he clung to the Lord, he did not depart from following him, but kept his commandments, which the Lord had commanded Moses. And so you read there and you think, finally, somebody that took out the high places and did everything God wanted him to do. But when you come to King Josiah, who came a couple kings after Hezekiah, we find out that Hezekiah didn't completely remove all of the high places. It says that he removed them, but there were a couple that he didn't, specifically the ones that Jeroboam set up in Dan and down in Bethel. And so it seems like he cleaned up everything else, but he left those last two. They seem to be monuments or something that just nobody wanted to touch, even King Hezekiah. So when we get to Josiah in 2 Kings 23, it says, furthermore, the altar that was at Bethel and the high place which Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, who made Israel sin, had made, even that altar and the high place he broke down. Then he demolished its stones, ground them to dust, and burned the Asherah. And so we know that Hezekiah didn't completely finish the job, because when Josiah comes around a couple kings later, it specifically says even those two high places that Jeroboam set up, he finally took care of those. In verse 16, it says, "Now when Josiah turned, he saw the graves that were there on the mountain. And he sent and took the bones from the graves and burned them on the altar and defiled it according to the word of the Lord, which the man of God proclaimed, who proclaimed these things. Then he said, 'What is that monument that I see?' And the men of the city told him, 'It is the grave of the man of God who came from Judah and proclaimed these things to you, these things which you have done against the altar of Bethel.' And he said, 'Let him alone, let no one disturb his bones.' So they left his bones undisturbed where the bones of the prophet who came from Samaria." Let me catch up with my notes real quick. So Josiah was the first king that actually destroyed the high place in Dan and Bethel that Jeroboam had set up. And he went as far as to not just destroy them, but it says in verse 16 there that he actually went and dug up some bones from the graveyard and went and burned those bones on the altar to completely defile it, just to, you know, kind of make sure that it's so detestable that nobody would want to touch this anymore. And he's so zealous to try to make sure that this is completely wiped out and completely gone. Actually, I've got a picture here. This is, if you're standing up on the Temple Mount in Jerusalem and you're looking east, this is down below is the Kidron Valley, and on the other side is the Mount of Olives. So this, if you were looking in this direction, this would have been where that verse earlier that talked about Solomon building the high places to the gods of Baal, or no, to the gods of Moab. It says that he built them on the mountain east of Jerusalem. So that would be over in this direction. And today, that's a graveyard over there on that hill. It's really hard to see, I'm sure, but if you see like a lot of teeny tiny dots, those are all just probably thousands and thousands of graves. And so you can picture Josiah is trying to figure out how he's going to completely prevent anybody from using these high places again. And he sees graves, he sees bones, and he, you know, grabs them, and he uses them to burn on the altar. And he sees a monument here, and he says, "What's that monument that I see?" Because, you know, he already took care of that bronze, or the serpent that Moses had that the people had turned into an idol. So he's looking for anything that people can use as an idol to get rid of. It's really hard because it's kind of dark, but down in the bottom corner, there's actually a couple of monuments of some sort that are down in the Kidron Valley there. Perhaps he's looking at something like that, some kind of monument that somebody set up, and he's saying, "What's that? Do we need to get rid of that too?" And they said, "No, that's the monument to that prophet that actually foretold what you are doing here with destroying these high places." And so he says, "Okay, we'll leave that guy alone." By the way, that instance that he's talking about with that prophet prophesying about what he's doing was back from 1 Kings 13, and that's when Jeroboam was at the high place that he set up in Bethel. So not the one up in Dan, but the one down below in Bethel. Jeroboam was there offering incense in 1 Kings 13 when this prophet comes in and foretells that a man, you know, years down the line, and he specifies Josiah by name, will do this, and he'll burn these bones on the altar. You may not remember that particular part of the story. The part you probably remember is where Jeroboam sticks out his hand to say, "Seize that man," and that's when his hand shrivels up. And then he says, "Oh, I'm sorry, you know, forgive me," and the prophet prays to God, and his hand is restored. So that's what this is referring back to. And so Josiah is finally removing every trace, as much as he can, of the idolatry of the high places, and completely getting rid of every piece to restore worship. as God intended. All right, I'd like to spend the rest of the time that we have just looking at a little bit of application, thinking of how we can make this useful to us. So one of the things I was thinking about as I was looking at this was that the whole problem with the high places started with the influence of the other nations. They didn't come from God, they came from the people that were there, and God warned them against that. And that's the way that things always are with sin. God often gives us warnings, tells us there's things to stay away from, and the devil likes to use the slippery slope where he gets us to start out with something small and it just gets worse and worse and worse. You know, we read about the Danites that just kind of took that prophet and his idols there. Later, King Solomon starts endorsing the high places and builds one himself. The next king after Solomon actually builds the high places up in Dan and Bethel. And eventually they're built in every city. If you look at 2 Kings 17:9, it says, "The sons of Israel did things secretly which were not right against the Lord their God. Moreover, they built for themselves high places in all their towns, from what watchtower to fortified city." And so it started out as kind of a small thing. You know, maybe they were even using the high places to worship God as he wanted because they didn't have a temple and that was their altar that they were using. We don't really know exactly. But over time, it just got worse and worse to the point where they had these high places in every town and they're using them to worship other gods instead of God. And eventually that would be the reason they would be destroyed, because God was sick of their idolatry. What can we learn from Josiah? I put down that sometimes there are bad habits or even sins that have been around forever and need to go and need to be cleaned up. You know, if you think about it and you look at the timeline, Jeroboam was the first king of Israel who put those high places in Dan and Bethel, and king after king after king for years and years let them go. Even the good ones that cleaned up all kinds of other stuff, they still did not take down those high places. And we get to Hezekiah, and he takes care of all the high places except for those two. And they've kind of been around for so long. And in fact, if you look at the timeline, I don't have an exact date, but it's somewhere between 200 and 300 years that those high places existed between Jeroboam and Josiah. And they've been around so long that even the kings were afraid to touch them. They just seemed like almost part of the history of Israel. You know, they were the thing you go to when you go to these towns. You know, I'm sure they had all kinds of political reasons and reasons it was going to be suicide to touch those things. You know, they'd been around forever, but they needed to go. And, you know, maybe there are things in our lives that are like that, that have been around forever, that maybe they're not even sinful, they're just bad habits that we need to let go of. And not only that, but when you look at what Josiah did, he wasn't like the kings that went before him where they did 90% or 99%. He went 100% of the way, and he took every step possible to make sure that it was completely eradicated from the whole area. That nobody was going to go back and use those altars. He burned those bones. He's looking for the snake. He's looking for monuments, for anything that the people could use. And so he's completely eradicating that sin to make sure that it never comes back. And so we can learn from that as well. What can we learn from Jeroboam? Jeroboam, it says, when he set that up, that it became a sin because the people went as far as Dan to worship on those high places instead of going to Jerusalem. And we know, obviously, it was a sin for Jeroboam to build that high place, but he also, because of his sin, he caused other people to sin in following his example and in using those high places that he set up, and he even obviously encouraged them to sin by using those high places. And it wasn't just the people that were during his day, because those high places were used for those few hundred years up until the time of Josiah. And so not only did Jeroboam sin and cause the people around him to sin, but the choices he made had devastating consequences on the entire nation for hundreds of years after him, for generations and generations. And so the decisions that we make, whether good or bad, can have lasting consequences for generations after us and affect the lives of many others. There's one other thing I'd like to look at. In Genesis chapter 49, verse 17, there's an interesting statement that's made about Dan. Now, this is in Genesis. This is before the tribe of Dan even exists. Genesis 49, 17 says, "Dan shall be a serpent in the way, a horned snake in the path, that bites the horse's heels so that his rider falls backwards." And you read that and say, what is that talking about? I can't say 100% I'm sure what it means, but I'll give you my best explanation, and if you think you can straighten me out, then I'd love to be to learn more. What this verse sounds like is that Dan is going to cause a problem, basically. He's referred to as a snake that bites the heel of a horse, and because of that, the person that's on the horse falls backwards. And I can't help but wonder if this is referring to how Dan is, or from Dan, is going to come that influence of idolatry that affects the rest of the nation later. That Dan is, you know, we see that the city of Dan starts out with the high places, with the wrong people being priests, and later the whole nation of Israel ends up going there and participating in that. And if we look, there's something similar that's recorded in Jeremiah. Jeremiah chapter 8, verses 16 and 17. It says, "From Dan is heard the snorting of horses. At the sound of the neighing of his stallions, the whole land quakes, for they come and devour the land and its fullness, the city and its inhabitants. For behold, I am sending serpents against you, adders for which there is no charm, and they will bite you, declares the Lord." Here we, in Jeremiah 8, we're reading about Dan, and we're reading about snakes, and we're reading about horses, but it's not used in the same way. Dan isn't referred to as the serpent here. It says in verse 16 that there is the sound, the snorting of horses, the sound of neighing and stallions, and the land quaking like a mighty army of horses, and they come to devour the land in its fullness. And it talks about God sending the serpents in to bite them. And it seems in this context that it's talking more about the punishment that is going to be coming at this time, because their idolatry is complete, because God is tired of it, and he's going to judge Israel. And so these horses and the snakes that are coming to bite them might be the other nations that God is sending in. I could be wrong. If you understand these verses better, maybe I've missed it. But that seems to be what I've gotten out of that, and that certainly seems to be the case from what we've read about the idolatry that we see, especially coming from Dan. So I hope these thoughts have been helpful to you, that you've been able to learn. Maybe I've encouraged you to dig in a little more, especially on these last few verses. And in conclusion, I'd just like to ask a couple of questions. You know, in your life, have you been more like Jeroboam or more like Josiah as far as being a bad influence on those around you, or being a good influence and taking out the things that people before have set up? Have you allowed yourself to be to have bad influences in your lives? Because that's what the problem that Israel had. They were God's people, but they allowed the nations to influence them for bad. And if you have had allowed others to influence you for evil, has it gone farther than it started with? Because we saw that the devil works slowly, that things progress slowly. And sometimes you start out with a bad influence and it just progresses and gets worse over time. I often think of Psalm 1 where it talks about walking with the unrighteous and then standing with them and then sitting with them. There's a progression that's there. Are there bad habits or sins that have been around for a long time that need to be completely destroyed? Just like Josiah completely destroyed those high places that had been around for hundreds of years. Or have you made bad choices which have affected your souls or the souls of others? Just like Jeroboam did. If we can help you in any way, whether you're a Christian or you're not a Christian and you'd like to know more or you'd like to be a child of God, we'd like to help you and we encourage you to come forward as we stand and sing.